Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
The Prince of Peace has arrived in the Holy Land. Yes, that's right. Tony Blair has arrived for talks with Benjamin Netanyahu. What could possibly go wrong? And Michel Moon did not commit suicide. And neither did Ben Wallace. And Arabia Felix arises. Yemen is where the action is now moving. And like a banana republic, Colorado has removed Donald Trump from the ballot paper next November for the presidential elections. He's only the leading candidate. If that happened in any other country, the United States would be invading to reinstate best democratic practice. And California says it's about to follow suit. We'll be talking to some experts about whether this maneuver is likely to succeed or fail. Well, it's all coming up, including a poll on whether Santa will be safe over Bethlehem this weekend. Will Israel shoot him down with a missile? Or does he have his own Iron Dome, if you get my drift? We'll be here for the next 2 hours. Don't leave us. It's the mother of all talk shows.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
It's not like the wise men arriving from the East carrying gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Although there may be gold involved, because Tony Blair doesn't do much without gold changing hands. But he is now in the Holy Land and will be talking, negotiating. On whose behalf? Who knows? The WEF, Klaus Schwab, the nascent world government? I don't know. But Tony Blair is there looking suitably demonic. Well, he is about to meet a man even more satanic than him, although that is debatable. What he's going to say to Netanyahu and on whose behalf, we can only hazard a guess. But a clue might be in the completely disastrous opinion polls in the United States, which show Joe Biden losing in a landslide to Donald Trump, the putative Republican Party candidate, about which more later. Amongst young voters, hardly anybody at all is going to vote for Joe Biden. Amongst Muslim voters in the United States, nobody at all is going to vote for Joe Biden. At least they're not going to admit that they are to an opinion pollster. God, of course, is another witness. The truth is, Joe Biden has completely wrecked his re-election with his reckless, murderous largesse that he has handed over to Benjamin Netanyahu, a man who wouldn't see him coming. He would be happy if Joe walked off the end of a stage and cracked his skull, because Netanyahu is that kind of guy. But Joe is absolutely determined to kill as many Palestinian children as possible before he is forced to demand a ceasefire. Joe Biden is on the ballot. Donald Trump may not be. Not only is Joe Biden on the ballot, the stepmother of Hunter Biden, Mrs. Joe Biden, says decency is on the ballot. Decency. Hunter Biden, Joe Biden, shower scenes, heavy breathing, in little girls' ears, sniffing under their arms. Decency is on the ballot. Hunter Biden's dad is on the ballot, otherwise known as decency. And other Democrats and their mouthpieces in the mainstream media frequently tell us that democracy is on the ballot paper in November. This despite the fact that the Biden administration has shredded more liberty in the United States than any president ever. Don't even think about Richard Nixon. Don't even think about Ronald Reagan. Joe Biden has slashed the democratic liberties available to the American public like no other president before him. And he's eagerly awaiting the transfer of the world's number one journalist and publisher, Julian Assange, so he can lock him up for 145 years in a Colorado super penitentiary. The idea that democracy is on the ballot, coming from a party that is seeking actively to remove from the ballot not just their number one opponent, but an opponent who is leaving them trailing in his wake, tells you everything about the sick, cynical hypocrisy of the political class in the United States and elsewhere. I'm coming to that also. The idea you can remove your main opponent and say that democracy is on the ballot is, I mean, Alice in Wonderland. It is words meaning exactly what you say that they mean. Bereft of all content, hollowed out of all meaning. Democracy is on the ballot, but our main opponent is not. Now, you may say it was only a court in Colorado. Interestingly, the Denver-educated judges voted against disqualifying Donald Trump, but the Ivy League judges on the court in Colorado voted to disqualify him, and they prevailed. So at this moment in time, the chief opponent of the sitting president will not be on the ballot paper in Colorado. I thought, well, this will be overturned. There must be multiple levels of appeal that you can overturn this on. But I see now that it is a very clear strategy that is being followed, because this evening, Supreme Court in California instructed its attorney general to examine how they could exclude Donald Trump from the presidential ballot in one of the largest states in the union, with one of the largest electoral college votes, if not the largest. So this is becoming serious. It's making a mockery of America, of course. It's making a mockery of the very idea of decency or democracy. But it's a very perilous course, because what they are clearly intent upon doing, and all of their civil liberty shredding in the last few months has been in preparation for, they seek to provoke an uprising amongst the supporters of Donald Trump. They seek another January 6th so that they can crack down further, so that they can seek to justify the unjustifiable act of ruling a former president and the leading candidate in the race out of the ballot paper. But sick cynicism is not the prerogative of the United States of America. I wondered why Bonkers Baerbock and David Cameron and President Macron had begun to use the formulation a sustainable ceasefire. They want one. They want a sustainable ceasefire, all of them. Now, all those who vetoed a ceasefire in international fora over the last 75 days, but they want a sustainable ceasefire now. So I drilled down today on what they mean. And when you hear from me what their sustainable ceasefire actually means, you'll probably agree with me that there is no sickness of which these people are not capable. David Cameron, who when just Prime Minister of Britain, just 13 years ago, described Gaza as the largest open-air prison camp in the world, which cannot be allowed to continue in this way. Well, he was only Prime Minister then. Now that he is Foreign Minister, he wants a sustainable ceasefire. Here's what they mean by sustainable ceasefire. They mean that Israel will cease firing when it has convinced itself of the success of its military mission in defeating Hamas in Gaza. Giving the murderers, giving the genociders the right to decide when to cease firing doesn't qualify as a ceasefire, even in Alice in Wonderland. It is sand, desert sand, thrown in the eyes of gullible journalists. Only Sky News has called this out. And only this evening has it called it out. Though this has been going around for a whole week, Sky News said tonight that what they mean by a sustainable ceasefire is that Israel can decide when to cease fire. And the war is spreading. It's not just plumbing new depths in Gaza. It's not just murdering record numbers of church parishioners in the Holy Family Church, in the church, a Catholic church in Gaza, where an elderly lady and her middle-aged daughter were murdered just a few days ago. The deputy prime minister of Israel said that can't be true because there are no churches in Gaza. There are no Christians in Gaza. That's what she said on television. And of course, the Pope and Cardinal Nichols, the Cardinal at Westminster Church, Cathedral rather, made clear, these people are lying through their teeth. We are the pontifical representatives of these Christians in these churches in Gaza that Israel has bombed and destroyed. But the war isn't now confined to Gaza. Not even confined to Gaza, Jerusalem, and the West Bank. A new actor has entered the war, Arabia Felix, the original Latin name for southern Arabia, nowadays the Yemen. I have spoken many times, I hope powerfully, about the purity of the people of Yemen, the purity of their adherence to religion, the purity of their enunciation of the wonderful Arabic language, and the purity of the people in their dignity and self-respect. As I put it on Sunday, they are poor, but they are pure. They are the last Arab country. And they have risen up in defense of the Palestinians under siege, starvation, pestilence, disease, and war in the Gaza Strip. Their demands are simple. You must stop this bombardment. You must lift this siege. Allow the Palestinians food and water and stop murdering them. Or we will intercept any shipping in the Red Sea on its way to or on its way from the state of Israel, or any shipping that is owned by Israel. Now, when you put it like that, that's actually something that all the countries in the world should have been doing. All the Arab countries in the world should have been doing. All the Muslim countries in the world should have been doing. But it has been left to the poorest Arab people in the entire Arab world to make their stand. And they have made it good. They have already, they have uncannily accurate missiles, such that Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates, and for a time Qatar, had to end their war with the people of Yemen because the ability of the Yemenis to destroy the oil infrastructure, the entire oil business of its neighbors, became crystal clear. And they have landed their missiles on the decks of Israeli-owned shipping. They have seized Israeli-owned shipping. They have seized and halted shipping going to or from Israel with oil and with weapons and with God knows what else. Most people in the world think that the Yemenis have done a noble thing, particularly as they themselves have had to undergo more than a decade of siege and bombardment themselves. But that's the kind of people they are in Yemen. Joe Biden has assembled a coalition to fight little Yemen, poor Yemen. And what a coalition it is. The only Arab country willing to join Joe Biden's coalition to invade and attack Yemen is mighty Bahrain, which is actually just a car park for the US and UK naval forces, both of whom have military bases on the tiny piece of land connected by a bridge to Saudi Arabia. But Saudi Arabia refused to join. The UAE refused to join, and for obvious reasons. Only one Arab country, Bahrain. But they do have the mighty Seychelles on their side. You know, that mighty navy of the Seychelles. And they have the might of the Netherlands. I've said before, the Netherlands has a navy? Really? Well, they're sending it. Not to defend the people of the Netherlands, but to stand up for Israel in the Red Sea. But the Yemenis have been very sober, very clear. If you attack Yemen, we will sink all of your ships. All your warships and all shipping in the Red Sea, owned by whomsoever, going wherever, will be halted. We will close the Red Sea and we will sink, Mr. Biden, any warships that you send against us. So I hope the mothers of the sailors in the Netherlands, in the Seychelles, in Bahrain, in Britain, in Canada, in France, and in the United States, hear this warning that after a decade of war, the Yemeni armed forces are amongst the most powerful armed forces in the world. And moreover, they fight not for gold. They fight not for gain. They fight not for territory. They fight for God. They believe more deeply than almost anyone on earth, they believe that they have a religious obligation to rescue the poor Palestinians in the Gaza Strip being murdered wholesale for 75 days. Hear me. Please hear me. The prime ministers and presidents who have dispatched their navies to the Red Sea, no good will come of it. Now, the war has spread to Lebanon. This evening, major Israeli aggression is reported. People have been sniped to death, two of them today, and many others have been murdered in bombardment of private houses in the south of Lebanon. The leaders of the Lebanese resistance have been very clear all along. if you kill our civilians, we will kill your civilians. If you bomb our territory, we will bomb your territory. Now, what does all this add up to? It adds up to a war on multiple fronts, and not just for Israel. Because the Iranian foreign minister said tonight that they provide logistical and other assistance to the Yemeni armed forces, and that they will stand by the Yemen until the end of time. That's pretty unequivocal. That's pretty clear. That means if America and its coalition, the Seychelles and the Netherlands, go to war with Yemen, ultimately they're going to be at war with Iran. Maybe that's what they intended all along. But if they go to war with Iran, I'm going to make a risky prediction. And my prediction is that Russia and China will not allow Iran to be defeated by this ragbag of racist military forces assembled in the Red Sea. And then we're back with World War III on the table. I told you it's going to be a bumpy night. Fasten your seatbelts. It's the mother of all talk shows.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
Garland Nixon is the wisest, the smartest, and the coolest of our American commentators. It's always a pleasure to see him here on the Mother of All Talk Shows. To talk us through some pretty dramatic developments, Garland, I mean, it's not every day a banana republic decides to take the lead candidate in the election off the ballot so that he can't stand for election, especially when you're claiming that democracy is on the ballot paper. Decency, as Mrs. Biden said, is on the ballot paper. Talk us through what's happened.
Yes, the state of Colorado, their highest court has ruled in favor of plaintiffs that are arguing that former President Donald Trump can't be on at this point in time, the primary ballot against the other Republicans because he is an insurrectionist. He was involved in an insurrection. What people need to know is that the roots of this particular law come from the Civil War. After the Civil War, a number of Confederate politicians returned to Washington, D.C. and said, OK, we're ready to come back and hold our seats in Congress. And of course, there were laws passed that, no, you were involved in an insurrection and you shouldn't be allowed to hold office again. And that certainly has never been used in this manner before. I would have to suspect that the chances of this passing muster in the Supreme Court aren't really very strong because there's no factual basis in the argument that President Trump, former President Trump, was actually involved in an insurrection. He has not been formally charged with anything, with being involved in an insurrection. He hasn't been found guilty of being involved in an insurrection. And there has never, other than rhetorically, it has never been legally proven that an insurrection occurred. So I don't think that goes past the Supreme Court. However, the consequence, if it did, would be pretty grand, because there are other states that are attempting to do this, to utilize the same law and do the same thing. Keep in mind also that Colorado is a blue state, that President Trump is not likely to win. It's only for the primary anyway, so it's not as consequential as one would think. However, for every action, there's an opposite, equal and opposite reaction. And the likelihood is that you would start to see those types of things happen in some of the more conservative controlled states. And we'd end up with an election where Joe Biden could only run in blue states. Donald Trump could only run in the red states. And the absurdity of this empire would be pronounced and obvious for the world to see.
Yeah, you've taken the words right out of my mouth. What's to stop red states taking Joe Biden off the ballot paper because he's been impeached or is about to be impeached, or because of what he did in Ukraine, or for any number of reasons? And then we won't have an election at all.
Exactly. And, you know, if you've been paying attention to Joe Biden recently, this reeks of desperation. You know, Joe Biden recently told us that, you know, October 7th was 65 years ago, and that his Irish Catholic late father was wandering around a kibitz then. I mean, the guy has no clue, you know, what's going on at this point. And it just seems that his party is so desperate that they'll try any means necessary to try to get this guy elected. And to be quite honest, I got to give him credit, because the only way Joe Biden is going to get elected is if he's running against an empty ballot. Otherwise, he loses to pretty much anybody.
Now, you mentioned that this was Colorado's highest court. So when you say Supreme Court, do you mean the Colorado Supreme Court or the Supreme Court in Washington?
No, I mean the Colorado Supreme Court, because this had got this particular case had been appealed up to the Supreme Court of Colorado. So they had found in favor of it, and now it goes out of the state. You know, they used the Colorado Constitution to make the argument that he couldn't be on the ballot. But keep in mind, this is, at this point, it is the ballot for the primaries. It would still, even that would make a difference, because Donald Trump's lead in the United States throughout the states and the Republican primary is so pronounced that it's not going to change an outcome, but it certainly would be used to we could see that spreading and change the dynamics of elections in the United States forever.
Yeah, it's already spread to California. The district attorney has been tasked with examining whether the same thing could happen there. Now, California is, of course, a state of vastly greater consequence in every way than Colorado. What's the chances, another blue state, what's the chances of them doing the same thing?
If this passes muster in the Supreme Court, I would say the chances are high that a number of blue states would then attempt to do the same thing. Now, if you look at the actual states, I can see where it would could potentially hurt the Democrats more than Republicans, for this reason. The Democrats have been able to turn a few of the southern states, North Carolina, Georgia, during some of the recent elections. And there's a huge red state, Texas, which the Democrats have been eyeing, and due to demographic changes, feel like they have a chance to win at some point in the future. So if the red states, particularly these states that have been teetering on the edge of going to the Democrats, decide that they want to step in and do the same thing, it could have a dramatic effect on the Democrats. But then, as questionable as our electoral process is already, this would really be the final nail in the coffin, because if in fact the winner of the election depends on, you know, which state is blocking which candidate out, it gets to a point where there's no point in people voting anymore, that this is just lawfare. And rather than having to, do what they do with the machines now, it'll be out in the open.
Yeah, you might get another civil war, and Trump can be Robert E. Lee, and the Confederates might win this time. So you better look out. The situation with Ukraine, tell us about that, Garland. Blinken has announced an early Christmas present for Zelensky, that there's nothing in the post after Christmas Day. It's over, isn't it?
Possibly. I mean, it's certainly possible that sometime after the first of the year that the Democrats and the Republicans come together and they have another, you know, tranche of money to supposedly give to Ukraine. As most people know, most of it goes to, you know, Lockheed Martin, General Dynamics, et cetera, right here in the United States. And what's left to be stolen by the Ukrainian and oligarchs is then shipped overseas. But it certainly appears as though the attention of the U.S. empire has shifted from Ukraine to the Middle East. They're done with this, and they will do as history tells us that they have done, in whether it's in Vietnam or Afghanistan. When they tire of a particular conflict, they just walk away. As you know, the Ukrainian government, the Kiev regime, is now speaking of conscripting up to 500,000 people, including, well, they've said they're not going to be women, but teenagers and people older than either of us. That's kind of frightening. But the issue becomes, if they conscript another 500,000 people, what are they going to arm them with? They have no, they're about to run out of ammunition. And I think even more importantly, there are people getting poisoned. There are people getting Christmas presents and birthday presents with live grenades. It certainly appears as though the Kiev regime is on the border of some kind of internal collapse or civil war on its own.
Now, Yemen, that's your next port of call. I don't know if anybody in Washington knows anything about Yemen. I myself have studied it, followed it for 50 years, more than 50 years, ever since I saw the Scottish soldiers in their kilts getting their bare backsides handed to them by the Yemeni people after taking control and murdering a significant number of Yemenis in the port of Aden, the Crater District. I've never forgotten it. The skirl of the pipes, the swirl of the kilts, and the gunfire shooting down unarmed Yemeni people. But the Yemeni people prevailed over British imperial control, and they have prevailed over the coalition involving the US and Britain, but led by Saudi Arabia and the UAE. They have prevailed over that. They have for 10 years been fighting. Now they're going to fight Joe Biden. How's that likely to go?
Well, it appears to me that the Ansar Allah, the Yemen leadership, have created a dynamic for the U.S. empire that I would analogize to quicksand. You know, one thing we know about a person who gets stuck in quicksand, the more they struggle, the quicker they seal their own doom. And what's going on now is, if the U.S. decides they want to attack Yemen, if they want to, then Yemen has some options, which is to attack U.S. ships, which in that instance, and here's what's important, because I used to be involved in insurance. If you have insurance, what almost all insurance policies say, they will not pay in a war zone. In the event that a firefight starts, shall we say, with missiles between the U.S. in the Red Sea area, the U.S. and Yemen, all of the shipping companies will then have to face the reality that their insurances have declared the area a war zone, and they will have no insurance in a war zone. So if the U.S. attacks Yemen, they, by their own actions, close the entire area to all shipping, not just shipping that goes to Israel. And of course, they create the possibility that Yemen could attack infrastructure in some of the local oil-producing countries. So this is, as I said, it's quicksand. If the U.S. empire decides to struggle, they're going to go down faster.
Have they walked into this with their eyes wide shut? I mean, has there been any debate in the U.S.? Does anybody know anything about the Yemenis and their capabilities?
Not really. You know, there this does get somewhat reported on the mainstream media, but yeah, there's a lot of propaganda involved. I think one of the interesting dynamics here also is the fact that the leaders of Yemen are acting in concert with the population. If you read and research this, you'll find that the population of Yemen is supporting their leaders completely. In fact, most of the people around the Middle East are supporting Yemen, and a lot of people around the world are supporting what Yemen is doing because most people want a ceasefire. While on the other side, Joe Biden is not only not consulting with his people, 76 to 80% of the constituents of his own party, if you look at the various polls, oppose what he's doing. His polls are in the trash. He's at 34% right now. Not that I'm sure he really knows that, but I'm sure his handlers at least know that. So he is going against the wishes of the people in his own party, in his own country, and he is now in opposition to people who are wholly unified against the U.S. empire's machinations in the Middle East.
Now, lastly, Garland, and I'm always grateful for your time, I just read out some breaking news about Catholic nuns being murdered in Gaza this evening. The convent of Mother Teresa, the convent founded by Mother Teresa, her nuns, was blown up yesterday. Parishioners were killed in the Holy Family Church at Christmas time by Israeli snipers. The Pope has become more and more bold in his denunciation of them. The mild-mannered Cardinal Nichols of the Westminster Cathedral was asked on Sky News, so you don't accept the word of the Israel Defense Force? And the cardinal answered in a word, no. So just how reckless does this whole thing have to become before someone calls a halt to it? Any straws in the wind in Washington on that?
Not at this point. And, you know, I would argue that what's going on now in Gaza is a bookend. On one end, the first bookend was, in fact, the beginning of the U.S. empire, which was started with what? You know, they genocided the indigenous population. They committed slavery and all types of terrible things for many, many years. And then they argued that was the old us. You know, that was before we were enlightened like we are. We're totally different now, and we would never do these kinds of things again. And now here is the bookend. The Gaza conflict, if you will, genocide, whatever you want to call it, is the bookend on the end of the U.S. empire. The U.S. empire now has no moral standing in the world. The leadership and the ruling elite in the U.S. empire does not even have moral standing amongst the people of this nation. So I think that what's going on in Gaza, this is it. This is game over. No more Tony Blinken running around the world pointing at other people saying that they are committing human rights activities or they're authoritarians. All of that stuff will be laughed at by the world. This is the final chapter in the precipitous downfall of an empire that's been involved in just terrible actions for its entire existence.
Amen to all that. Merry Christmas to you. Garland Nixon, thanks for joining us on the Mother
Thank
of
you.
All Talk Shows. Always a pleasure. Coming up after a short break is Dmitry Polyansky, the Russian UN ambassador. How about that then? You'll want to see it, I promise you. Stay tuned.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
Ambassador Polyansky from the Russian Federation delegation to the United Nations. So he's a very busy man. these days, and we're very lucky to get him. Excellency, thank you for joining us. Before I turn to what I invited you on to speak about, can I ask if you're in a position to update us on what's happening on the ceasefire resolution on Gaza, which Russia and China and the Arab countries have been trying to hammer out? And I did read that the desperate struggle is for a resolution that the US will not veto. Doesn't that just mean it would be a resolution that if the US would not veto it, it wouldn't be worth having?
Well, thank you for having me, George. Actually, the resolution that we are about to have, and it's not yet guaranteed, is, of course, quite weak, and we are very disappointed with that. However, it's not in our tradition to comment the internal affairs of Security Council until we haven't gone public on this. I know that the negotiations continue to get some kind of a text which would be acceptable for everybody, which is, again, not yet guaranteed. So I think that the last postponement, as we were informed, happened today, and we are about to vote tomorrow in the before noon. That's what the Ecuadorian presidency told us. I don't think it's worth waiting any much longer, because the picture is already clear, and very few people believe that there will be a breakthrough in the Security Council. However, it's up to pen holders, and the pen holders in this case are United Arab Emirates, to decide on when to hold the vote, whether to put it to vote or not, whether to withdraw text or not. So that's why we are not in the driver's seat in this case. We were in the driver's seat on several other occasions, but not in this one.
You must be anxious about developments in the Red Sea. Actually, the only shipping that can now pass untrammeled through the Red Sea are Russian tankers. Another victory for Putin, they will say. Everyone else's shipping has more or less stopped. The port of Eilat has ceased operating. The cost of insurance has gone through the roof. So you don't actually have to blockade the Red Sea. It's effectively blockaded itself by the existence of a conflict there. Now, President Biden has assembled an armada from the likes of the Seychelles, Netherlands, Bahrain, those mighty navies are steaming towards the Red Sea. How concerned are you that if war breaks out between this not-so-grand coalition and the armed forces of Yemen, that it will drag in Iran and thus drag in all the friends of Iran? How concerned are you in New York about that?
Well, we're quite concerned, and of course, let's try to bar hypothetical scenario, but we discussed this issue in the Security Council in close consultations. So on the one hand, we absolutely share the necessity to provide freedom of maritime navigation there, and we joined the others in the press statement of the UN Security Council, calling on Houthis to not to make such steps. On the other hand, we warned that any kind of force reply by force in such circumstances risk bringing the situation further to the brink of confrontation. And this is the scenario that we want to avoid. We also understand that of course, what's happening there is a reflection of situation in Gaza. And the more situation there aggravates, the more chance that the situation in Yemen and around the Red Sea will also become quite problematic.
Well, all Yemen are doing is applying economic sanctions of the kind so beloved by the empire in so many theaters, including against Russia, I may say. They're saying that you are massacring Palestinian children, so we will not allow your ships or any ships going to or from your ports to pass through our Red Sea. Most people in the world think that's rather a noble thing.
Well, There is certain logic, of course, there, if you look at this from Middle Eastern and Yemeni perspective, but we also should look at this from the perspective of world trade routes and safety of passage and safety of navigation. There are certain commitments of all the countries, and what is happening there is very dangerous, and we certainly do not support this kind of actions, though, again, we intend to see the bigger picture. And the bigger picture implies also the situation in Gaza, and we think that we need to concentrate there and to solve this issue. When this issue is solved, it will be easier to solve the issue in Red Sea for sure.
Let me turn then to what I did want to talk to you about, Ukraine. Blinken said this evening that the Christmas presents in the post for Ukraine will be the last. This is rather a significant statement because it was preceded for the last nearly 2 years with as long as it takes, we'll do anything that is necessary and so on. So the United States, logjam in Congress, the parlous state of their economy and finances, but perhaps above all, they're turning away to another theater of conflict in which they're deeply involved, namely the Middle East and West Asia. What do you think the main impact will be on the war in Ukraine, the special military operation, of effectively the pulling of the plugs by the United States and, one presumes, its vassal states also?
Well, I think that we shouldn't concentrate too much on the issue of whether the money, the help will be given to Ukraine or will it not be given, in what quantities. Frankly, we do not calculate. We do not count somebody else's money. We only calculate them and count in Security Council when it comes to the discussion on how many good and noble things could have been done with this kind of financing in the world. That's the only way we compare the volumes that US and other allies spending for arms and not for development. And this is not only us. As for the Ukrainian situation, well, I understand that at some point of time maybe there will be a decision on some additional money for Ukraine, some additional weapons. But the issue is bigger, and the issue is that everybody understands that it is not making the difference in the battlefield. So enormous money was spent in Ukraine, enormous amount of armaments were sent to Ukraine. It didn't help Ukraine prevail as everybody was hoping, though de facto the whole NATO bloc is now behind Ukraine. But the problem is not for Ukraine is not in arms now. The problem is in people, because the people don't want to fight. That's quite clear. They didn't want to fight from day one, but there were some nationalists and some people who were very much determined to fight for Kyiv regime. Now it's very difficult to find really those who want to fight for Kyiv regime. We all see the films, the video reels about forced conscription, which is already being named forced conscription to the grave by the Ukrainian society. So people are avoiding this because people are very much disappointed and disenchanted in Zelensky and his regime. He promised one thing when he came to power in 2019. He promised equal rights to Russian speakers and the others. He promised respect for their national, historic, cultural identity. He promised to bring peace through Minsk agreements with his compatriots in the East. He deceived all the voters who voted for them, and they voted massively. 75% was his support. So he did everything to the contrary what he promised, and he just made his country a geopolitical tool of the US, a geopolitical pawn at the chessboard, and his countrymen as cannon fodder for the US and NATO interests. People understand this, people see this, and that's why there are no more volunteers in Ukraine, and they now acknowledge this fact. People don't want to fight. So no matter how many armaments, how many money you would send to war in Ukraine, the problem in Ukraine is the fatigue, and the problem is the disenchantment, the fact that the people of Ukraine now understand who is their real enemy, and that's not Russia, that's the Kyiv regime and Zelensky.
In abnormal times too. I mean, I'm thinking of the Stauffenberg plot to destroy the top of the Hitler regime. When a dictatorship like the one Zelensky now leads begins to lose, and its people lose faith in the way that you have described, well, the devil finds work for idle hands, we may say. It's quite likely that the tensions between Zelensky and Zaluzhny, Zelensky and the mayor of Kiev, the world champion boxer, this may break into a fight, no?
They are like spiders in a box. So we, of course, read these news sources, but I don't think we count on this. Our president repeatedly confirmed that the aims and the goals of our special military operation remain in force, and we are continuing to implement them through military means as long as there are no meaningful negotiations. And of course, Ukraine is not ready for meaningful negotiations. You know that Zelensky himself banned himself from any negotiations with Russian government by adopting a law more than 1 year ago. So it's ridiculous to speak about any negotiations. They had opportunity to get quite a good deal last April, but they were talked out of this deal by UK and by the US. Now, of course, they regret it very much. It's quite visible because they will never get anything even comparable to this in such circumstances. But what can they do? I frankly do not know their strategy, and it's not our intention to look so much at Ukraine, what they are doing, how they are fighting, who will be there. We are fighting there with the neo-Nazi regime, Russophobic regime, which was installed not by Zelensky himself. It was installed by the anti-constitutional coup in 2014. So Zelensky came to power when people believed that he would change anything, when they were disappointed in Poroshenko and they chose Zelensky. So now they are disappointed in Zelensky. I don't know who can deliver on the promises that he made, for sure not him, but it's up to Ukrainians to decide. We continue the implementation of the forces of the tasks of our special military operation, demilitarization of Ukraine. First of all, we already completed this goal, but the West provides Ukraine with more and more arms, which are being destroyed. Denazification of Ukraine, which is also a very important thing, because we can't tolerate a neo-Nazi state at our borders, the regime at our borders. It was absolutely clear from the outset. There are other goals, like the rights of Russia.
Ah, we lost Ambassador Polyansky's line. We'll try and get back to him. Fascinating stuff, though. Ambassador Polyansky is back on the line. Ambassador, thank you for your perseverance. I was making the point, in a way, about the philosophy now behind the special military operation. Its demands were clear enough. Its goals were clear enough. But recently, both you and, even more importantly, President Putin himself have, as it were, begun to think out loud. So President Putin was talking yesterday about the Russian people in other parts of the east and the south of Ukraine. And I'm one who believed that all of this effort will not have been made just to stop at the Dnipro. That places like Odessa, which are manifestly Russian cities, Russian Jewish citadels, actually, and many other parts right along the coast, are effectively parts of Russia that were given away, ironically, effectively by the Soviet Union back in the day. Because let's remind people, Kiev itself used to be the capital of Russia. This was all Russia. The word Ukraine means the borderlands. So are we on the cusp of an ingathering of all the Russian-speaking people in Ukraine? And that will, of course, change the map of Western Ukraine very considerably indeed.
Well, George, of course, I don't have a crystal ball, and I don't have the exact plans of our special military operation, as you might imagine. So we have very professional military people who are planning this, judging on the resources on the ground, judging on the situation. What I can tell you is, first of all, of course, there are a lot of people, I would say very many people in Odessa, in Kyiv, in other places in Ukraine, who are waiting for us, and it's not a secret. They are making appeals, and I would say that the Ukrainian propaganda initially, it was speaking about some kind of guerrilla movement in the territories if they would be taken by Russia, as they put it. So look at the new regions of Russia. There is no guerrilla movement. There are only the sabotage groups which are being sent to by Kyiv and which are being neutralized because of the cooperation of local citizens. This is a big disappointment for Kyiv regime. So people there in our new territories absolutely support Russia. I'm absolutely sure that the support will be at the same level in the other regions of Ukraine. The question is that this war was never about territory. It's a big mistake to think that we were after Ukraine because of territory, because we wanted Ukraine to be Russified, we wanted to do away with the Ukrainian language. This is not true. So it all started to protect Russian-speaking population in the east, in Donbas, which was heavily shelled on the eve of our special military operation. There were hundreds of thousands of refugees coming to Moscow, to other cities, to Rostov. So that was the initial moment. Nobody was thinking about territories, about some kind of inclusion of new regions in Russia. That was not the plan. But of course, the plans are being adopted with the course of special military operation. And we all see now, it's quite clear when you read Ukrainian Telegram channels and Russian Telegram channels, which is the main source of information for me, for example, about special military operation. You see that the Ukrainian front is about to crumble. It's about to crumble in the stronghold of this front near Donetsk, in Avdiivka, in Marinka. These strongholds were built for several years. They are very heavily armed and fortified, and it will be a big turning point in the whole campaign when these strongholds will be liberated. And I also can refer to the statements of President Putin and other Russian leaders that we will have to push Ukrainian troops back to the places from where they will not be able to threaten Russian territory and to threaten our citizens and to threaten our lands. So all this combined, I think, give certain reasons to those who believe that the special military operation will be continued towards Kyiv, towards Odessa, towards other cities. I don't want to speculate on this because it implies the life of many people, and it implies also the ardent work of my compatriots who are there on the battlefield. But I think that this is the expectation for everyone, that this threat from Ukraine should be neutralized, that there should never be any threat from these lands to Russia, and there shouldn't be any policy of this kind towards Russian-speaking population and Russian people. So I think that that's what I can say about this situation today.
Now, you, I don't know if it was a speech, the text of a speech or an article that I wrote from you, but I thought it was particularly profound, if I may say so. It talked about what is necessary as a security infrastructure, or architecture, rather, for the future. And you made the point that what's needed is not NATO versus Russia, it is all of Europe, including Europe's largest country, Russia, all of Europe having a security architecture amongst themselves, where no one on the European continent will or can threaten the security of any other part of the continent. develop your ideas for us, if you will.
Well, it's not my ideas, frankly. It's something that is within our foreign policy concept, that the concept of indivisible European security. And you know that on the eve of our special military operation, we reached out to NATO, we reached out to Washington, proposing the draft treaties on European security, which were condescendingly rejected by Washington and by Brussels. And that was our last attempt to come to a certain deal, which was, of course, include the provision of Ukraine remaining neutral and not joining NATO. The biggest mistake that our European neighbors are doing right now, at least some of them, I see that there are more and more sobering voices in these countries, but still, they somehow try to build security architecture against Russia and not within Russia. And this is a very, very big mistake. I think this leads us nowhere, and that does not eliminate all the possible reasons for conflicts and for threats in the European continent. So we were long advocating this notion of indivisible security when security of one state is not being provided at the expense of the security of the other. It's very simple, but NATO doesn't fit in this picture, at least in the way it is right now. NATO is an alliance which initially was perceived having Russia as an enemy or as an adversary, to put it mildly. That's why, of course, we will have inevitably, after the end of the Ukrainian crisis, we will inevitably have to wage discussions on European security, because otherwise, of course, the continent will remain very much fragile. And if the security of European continent it will be provided at the expense of Russian interests and with direct threats to Russian interests, I don't think it will be a sustainable construction that will be favorable for every nation on the continent, not only Russia.
Ambassador, thanks for joining us. Sorry about the numerous interruptions in our discussion. Very good of you to join us on a very, very busy night. After this short break, a very special guest, Gonzalo Lira Sr., father of the captive Gonzalo Lira, formerly of this parish for a very long time. Stay tuned.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
Gonzalo Lira Jr. was an honored guest of ours many, many times. He racked up enormous audiences for his brave and counterintuitive commentary on what was really going on in the war in Ukraine. He was arrested, then released, and then arrested, and then fled to the Hungarian border where he was again arrested, since when he has disappeared, apparently into a void. No trace can be found of Antony Blinken or Joe Biden asking for their citizens' release, or even inquiring as to his health, his safety, his life. Now, very recently, Gonzalo Lira Sr., who's also been a guest on this show before, made it onto the Tucker Carlson show and spoke so powerfully and movingly about what happened to his son. It struck me that that must have made a difference. Let's find out. Welcome back to the show, Mr. Gonzalo Lira Sr. I presume you can bring us no good news. because if there were good news, we'd probably have heard of it. But what do you know at this point about Gonzalo's plight?
First of all, thank you, George, once again for having me in your show. It's the senior hour. Almost a fortnight ago, I was interviewed by a well-known political commentator and writer. It made a splash because Elon Musk saw that interview and sent a message directly to President Zelensky. Zelensky answered through his police, the SBU. I would like to read some of the major points of this answer from the SBU. They say, Lira, who has a dual citizenship of Chile and the United States, was arrested in Kharkiv region for promoting Russian aggression in Ukraine and spreading pro-Kremlin ideas on social media. My answer to this accusation is very simple, George. Gonzalo never promoted Russian aggression. He plainly kept saying that Ukraine would never win a war against Russia. As for the spread of Kremlin ideas, it's a very puzzling answer from the SBU. It's a very vague accusation. Then they went further and accused them. The investigation revealed that Lira's video denied Russia's war crimes and justified Russian aggression. Lira claimed that Ukraine was shelling its own territory and the country was ruled by a neo-Nazi regime. My answer, there have been repeated accusations of war crimes from both sides, George. Gonzalo described Russia's aggression due to the ultimatum that Putin gave Zelensky not to join NATO. That was all he was asking for. Putin, like President Kennedy, could not accept another NATO country with missiles pointing at Moscow on its border. Biden and Victoria Nuland, as Gonzalo accused them on March 2022, which is a month after the invasion. The real perpetrators of this war in Ukraine's and Ukraine's destruction are Biden and Victoria Nuland. The USA gave the red cape to Zelensky and promised him that the USA and NATO would help him Ukraine defeat Russia. Rubbish. Many information sources accuse the Zelensky regime as pro-Nazi. There was a demonstration in Canada, as you very well know, George, and I'll leave it at that. Another accusation. He was initially released under house arrest after posting bail, but was arrested again in July when he tried to cross the border into Hungary. He was kept, George, from May the 1st to July the 6th, 67 days, incomunicado. The reason the SBU released Gonzalo at that time under bail was because of the pressure of the Chilean government, George. I live in Santiago, Chile, by the way. He jumped bail, George, because he was told that he would be found guilty and would serve 8 years in prison. Musk made his demand in response to a post by former Fox anchor Tucker Carlson, who accused the Ukrainian authorities of torturing Gonzalo Lira, in an Ukrainian prison since July for the crime of criticizing Zelensky. My son, George, was tortured in May and June of this year. he was extorted of $70,000 or he would lose his left eye with a toothpick, George. Scratching his eye with a toothpick. He pointed out all of this in three videos that he sent up in the air before crossing the border to Hungary. Unfortunately, he didn't make it. He had a broken rib and severely wounded in his chest because of the blows. And he pointed out, the guards didn't torture me. They outsource torture. The fellow mates tortured my son. The U.S. Embassy, George, has not done a thing. During those 67 days before he was released on July the 6th by paying a bond, you know, under a bail, they never visited Michael Gonzalo. Nobody knew how he was, where he goes, he was. And again, let me repeat, the U.S. Embassy did nothing. But in every single U.S. Embassy around the world, there's a big statement. If an American citizen is detained, the embassy comes into his help immediately, George, providing an attorney, providing even extra food if he's in need of, George. My son never received any support from the U.S. Embassy. What they did after he was once again detained, which was on August the 1st, because he couldn't cross the border to Hungary, they provided video conference with Gonzalo. Video conference is public nuisance. The detainee will not be able to tell you what is going on. Nobody went physically to see him. That is the way the U.S. Embassy...
One word from them, Mr. Lira, would see Gonzalo released. One word. Ukraine is completely a client state of the United States. We've now got no less than the world's most celebrated journalist, Tucker Carlson, on the case. We've got the titan of new technology, Elon Musk, on the case. What is stopping the U.S. from saying, for God's sake, just kick this guy out of Ukraine and stop this suppurating sore from giving us this kind of pain? I don't understand that, sir.
Well, let me give you a preview. I was communicating with Gonzalo's attorney, Victor Tsersakovsky. He doesn't speak English, George. So we translate each other, okay, through WhatsApp. Victor told me that Gonzalo has a court date next Friday, 22nd. They are translating what happened last December 12th, which was his prior court appointment. He's been 7 months in prison without any trial, and it's not so much for freedom of speech, George. That's what Victor was telling me. It's because they put this new law, the Article 432, which Gonzalo was totally unaware of. Article 432, George, if you say openly in the air that you don't like Zelensky, you're dead. I mean, to that extent is Article 432. Gonzalo obviously was unaware. I pointed out to Victor, Gonzalo is not an Ukrainian national. Gonzalo is a foreign citizen. How could he be aware of laws that have been passed recently? Deport him, for crying out loud. What are we waiting for?
Exactly.
But let me tell you.
Exactly. That's the obvious solution.
Well, you did it exactly what it is. This is the USA war. Listen, Gonzalo was born in the States while I was doing economics work in the USA. I went to college at 19 years old when I finished my high school in Santiago, Georgia. I lived in England before, by the way, between I was 10 to 13 years old, and I had the pleasure of living in your beautiful England, a country where law still prevails. I lived there.
Don't know about
and it. I have always been a British fan, and I worked for Rio Tinto for a whole bunch of years, George, by the way. Anyway, getting back to this is Biden's war. This is a USA war. The USA, as President Eisenhower pointed out in his last speech, George, I'm pretty sure you know, he was afraid that the USA would convert into a nation exporting armaments in the world. Well, that's exactly what they are, an exporter of armaments in the world. They lost against China. Any other good is made by China. The USA is exporting armaments. So what is its marketing strategy? Make wars in the world. They are the ones that caused the war against Russia. They told Zelensky, they're puppet. Here, take the red rope, just like the bullfighter, you know, and go after Putin. Well, that's what exactly he did, because Biden promised, we'll help you with the NATO countries, and we're going to beat the Russians. What I said before, which is rubbish. You will never win a war against Russia in Europe. How can you put soldiers? The American army is not the one that was in 1991, like Colonel McGregor says. You know Colonel McGregor very well. They're wearing dresses.
They're wearing dresses now. Mr. Lira, time is short. I ask you if you are able to tell us to whom our audience should write. How can we help is what I'm saying. What can we do to free Gonzalo Lira from prison?
Well, George, I think the logical, road to get Gonzalo free is to go to Zelensky and Biden. It's the only way, George. Let's face it. You said it before, and everybody is saying, Biden, the State Department, just a phone call to Zelensky and Gonzalo is free in 10 minutes. They are the ones that still have this man who has, let me try, if I may, George, this is Gonzalo, my son, with his son, my grandson, Ramon. He lives in Ukraine. He lives in a safe country, city in Ukraine, George. How can you have a man, a father, accused of such a nonsense, for crying out loud? I mean, this is pure nonsense. They just didn't like Gonzalo's speech. Gonzalo, on March, a month after the Russians invaded Ukraine, said, this is a futile war and it's going to end with the destruction of Ukraine.
I have to take your leave now. I'm going to take your advice and ask everyone to contact the American government and the Ukrainian government. So their embassies in your country, wherever you're watching this, write to the Ukrainian ambassador and write to the American ambassador, unless you're in America, in which case write to the White House. Raise the demand.
Directly.
Fight for the freedom, for the life of Gonzalo Lira. I bid you good night, sir, and thank you for appearing on the show again. Very, very kind of you to do so. It's a legend, Tommy, in Glasgow. Go on yourself, Tom.
Assalamu alaikum, brother. How you doing?
Alaikum salam. Very good. By the grace of God. What do you want to say?
Long time since I spoke to you, brother. I've been busy with my wee mum. She's got Alzheimer's and cancer, and I'm looking forward to having a wee good Christmas with her, unlike all the poor people in Palestine, George, that are lying there slaughtered at this genocide that is happening. And I just wanted to, I mean, I've been brokenhearted, George, for the last so many weeks, like everybody else, broken in tears. Every single thing that you see on, you know, Al Jazeera Press TV, the rest of the news is just absolute filth. When, you know, the lies and the way they treat people, it's beyond a joke. But the place is held holy to the three monotheistic religions. There was a night journey that was undertaken by the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, that ascended, went from Mecca, miraculous night journey that ascended from the Al-Quds, the Al-Quds Mosque, the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and ascended to heaven with all the other prophets of God and messengers of God, and recited the holy prayer. And when he came down, he was asked by the companions when they came back. And at that point, you know, it's well known for all the Muslims that are out there what happened that night. They all know. I'm not preaching, I'm just passing this out to other people out there how important a place it is that, you know, for Isa bin Maria, the son of Mary, Jesus, as he was known, that he was there reading the prayers. And people, the companions of Prophet Muhammad, peace upon him, said, what was Isa like? And he said he had the most amazing dark skin, which means he was black. He was from the Ethiopian. If you look at the Ethiopians today, they have got their heritage. You can see the real Jews from the time that was there. And anyone who knows about the Jewish peoples for 70 AD, when the Jewish diaspora was created, they would not return until the Messiah had returned. Now, the Muslims hold that the Messiah will return against the false prophet, the Dajjalic system that is in place, that the Palestinian babies fight. And God bless the babies in the incubators. The people of the year, Palestinian babies and women and men for fighting against the most terrific evil. God bless them. God bless all your listeners. And what we can do as a people out there, because we will be held accountable. I feel guilty as anything, because have we done enough? George, you've done everything and everybody's done as much, but we all know it's not been enough because these people are suffering. Where is the Arab world? If the Arab people are out there, the leaders, I've got a lot of problems against many of them, but you said something earlier on, George, the unity of the Arabs, for heaven's sake, get something going, because we should be all standing outside that Rafah camp and looking to bust the doors to get in to get this aid. What is stopping the aid? The people have been killed. It's been tragic. 20,000, 40,000, thousands left there unaccounted under the rubble. But now, what goes on now, millions could be at risk of starvation, disease. The world has to act, for goodness sake. If it's not done by the next 3 to 4 days, you know, heaven forbid us all, because this is a catastrophe. And George, what you've done, I've listened to you, all these shows. Josh in Arizona, part of the militia wing of the diplomatic brigade, God bless you as well, brother. I've heard everything. So this is me just phoning home, brother. But I love you a bits, and keep up the fight, because through people like yourself, to bring peace and justice to this world, channels like yours have to be exploded. Tell 10 to tell 10, and God bless. And Merry Christmas for people out there. And as I say, Palestine all the way. Free Palestine.
Thank you, Tommy. A very powerful and emotional call to bring the show to an end. We'll be back, God willing, on Christmas Eve at the usual time of 7 o'clock. Forgive me, I'm quite emotionally affected by that last call. I would add only this. I don't know if Santa would be shot down over Bethlehem by an Israeli missile. I'm pretty sure Jesus himself, if he came back, would be gunned down on the bleeding land of Palestine, on the bleeding holy land. The poll 19,261 people voted. Almost all of you thought Santa is in danger. I'll be back, God willing, on Sunday at 7 p.m. UK time. The Christmas Eve special. Be there.